All right. Another Tuesday.
How are you?
Pretty good. Excited to be back in the trailer with you.
You're here in the sharp. Bitcoin Center. You don't Center. Have your Fugazi t-shirt on?
No, nah, I'm all dressed up today. You've got a little polo. A little, I got a button down
it's
a
fancy
on.
Fancy Tuesday.
It's a big week. We're at 120K.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of exciting, I guess. Exciting.
Again.
Yeah, why not? You know, it's funny how for a really long time, obnoxiously, people would say, wake me up at 100K. I don't see those people dancing and, you know, hanging out with Wham and on the go-go here. But, I don't know,
Bitcoin kind of moves like a fixed index annuity these days. It just steps up, goes sideways, steps up, goes sideways, steps up, goes sideways.
We're doing the echo thing again. I'm going to turn off then.
Oh, man. Technical difficulties. Sorry, guys. There we go.
There we
that
go.
That was a quick fix.
Yeah. Well, I recognize the problem week two. Since the camera is really high, you know, so we got this headspace here.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
who produces this thing?
It's all not this guy, not me. It's all me. But so right in. Oh, my gosh. On the Jesse Myers show that I just released on the Bitcoin Matrix channel, there was a glare on my forehead. And this was noted in the comments on YouTube.
Really?
Yeah, oh, they went hard. They were just like, that is the most amazingly polished bald head I've ever seen. And, you know, please get rid of the glare next time.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
So, yeah, well, you know,
right.
Comes with territory. But I'm super excited to be here. I got nothing to be. I'm usually happiest when I'm not happy. And it's. But it's summer and everything's
You're
pretty good.
When I mean, you can complain.
Yeah, I think so. Some sort of. Well, I'm trying to not be in that place, you know. I guess I could find some things to be upset about, though. If we try, I think we'll get there tonight.
I'll get you.
You know, there's things you could just talk about, and they're just like, can't stand that. So, I don't know. Any interesting your news and your like that you came across today?
I don't think I even looked at the news today.
See, that's summer
buried. And doing getting stuff done.
You're gonna pick up the phone getting tomorrow it and it's just gonna be like an avalanche on X.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, as always, it seems like every day is like three news cycles now.
Yeah,
you know, morning, afternoon, and evening.
I'm
and...
just enjoying being agnostic.
Yeah, well, that's
I'm trying to get to the I think I've kind of got to the point where regardless of the news I'm like, whatever, what am I doing?
I don't know. Yeah, but then sometimes you.
Because I feel like I spent all of 2024, and at least a good portion of the early 2025, getting super like emotional and charged up about what's going to happen, and now I'm kind of like, I don't really care what's going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, you don't care at all, like
no,
like sort
I just,
of
I feel
AI
like, I feel
surveillance.
Like the universe is going where it needs to go. I can't stop it. And I'm going to enjoy the ride.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's enjoy the ride tonight then. Let's get into it. Let's get into the debate. Francis, I'll play the new intro song and then you can roll the intro piece graphics.
Hit it.
Oh.
All right, we're just into it. All right, first question, Cedric.
Yeah.
Block is launching American-made Bitcoin mining chips. Supply chain disruption or just rebranding?
I think that this is real supply chain disruption. I think this is important.
Yeah.
I think this is a form of decentralization. Is my mic on?
I don't know. You do sound a little... like de-miked. Yeah, your mic is not working. You're just a production disaster.
Oh, man. Okay, there we go. It's a lot coming at me at once, I guess, but just turn them all on. I think it's real. I think it's important. I think that we need decentralization in the production of hardware as well, and competition, I think, breeds, you know, sort of innovation. So this is great to see. Jack is, you know, coming at Bitcoin and kind of being a savior in so many different angles. I think he was the lead financial supporter in the case against Craig Wright. Square does point of sale. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of a treasury company there. And now the hardware.
Yeah.
So I think this is awesome.
I do think it's awesome. From what I understand, this chip is a like state of the art and it is going to literally be released next week or later this week. Like they're
launching next week.
It's not like, oh, we're starting the company. It's like it's coming to market with the chips. Like,
yeah, right if now. They're selling chips next week. This is also done, I think, in some sort of stealth mode for a while.
Yeah, it must
pretty
have
been. Cool. They were keep yeah. on the DL. Man, what,
like,
I'd like to know where it's made in America, though.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what that actually means. Like Apple kind of hid behind, you know, designed in America for a long time or assembled in America. So that would be interesting to see how the components
are
sourced and everything. Yeah, well, there we go. I mean, if they're lying or something. All right, let's go on to the next one. All right, the White House takes on debanking.
Yes.
Might banks find other ways to not cater to the little guy?
Well, okay, so the debanking message was about, you know, reputational risk, meaning you can't not bank a legitimate legal business because of reputational risk, which was a huge problem with Bitcoin companies. There was a lot of banks that wouldn't touch us because of the reputational risk with Bitcoin. And I think the key thing here, he says, is that you just... No, if it's a legal business, you should be able to, you have to bank them, right? So
right.
No religious, no political, and no reputational risk. I think this is a great executive order. The banks are still going to be able to back out based on financial risk or if they don't think it's a good business model or, you know, there's sure. still going to be things that they're going to be able to do to not bank certain people. It's not like they just have to take you. But at least it's going to pull out some of the prejudice, I believe.
Yeah, they really seem to be taking a stand on this debanking issue, Operation Choke Point, and finding, you know, I think it's great. It's kind of government should stay out of banking in a way.
Yeah. And they did put deadlines, like literally gave days and lines in the sand where the regulators had to make the appropriate changes and they had to... look into the bank's policies to make sure that they're moving in the right direction. So, you know, remains to be seen on all this kind of stuff because regulators sometimes seem to have a way to wiggle out of some of these things, at least in specific states. Some states might not exactly go along with it, but we'll see. I mean, this is a great start.
All right, let's go on to the next one.
The SEC softens on staking, saying it's not classified as a security. Is this a win for point of sale crypto or proof of stake crypto, I should say, rather than proof of work Bitcoin?
This is one of these things where, you know, it's good to see government. You'd say, okay, good to see government stay out of it, right?
Yeah.
And let's see what plays out, what innovation they could find. At the same time, though, I have a feeling that a lot of this staking stuff is going to be predatory. And I do want the government to protect consumers from things like outright fraud or, you know, grotesque predatory behavior. And so it remains, I don't know.
I still don't understand how proof of stake.
Well, this is liquid staking. So this is weird. Like this, I read the piece.
What is liquid staking?
You stake your crypto and you get some sort of other token in return that you could still use in the crypto economy.
Oh.
So this is liquid staking. I don't know if this is different than proof of stake. But so this is more about like
Hex and
I don't know
Celsius,
what platforms
this
use this. But
all this crap that blew up is now legal.
Yeah. Yeah. That right. And that's what Jesse Powell was saying at, you know, founder of Kraken was, is he going to get a refund on his fines?
Yeah, right.
You know, $30 million back.
I don't understand how proof of stake is not a security.
I really strongly feel that the government wants to lay the groundwork for stable coins.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're going to build an economy around a lot of BS.
Mm-hmm.
That I think will, and a lot of money will come into those sectors because they see.
This gives this will also go into when we talk about Ethereum. But like if they legalize all this junk, they could be heading to the point where they're just moving Wall Street to Ethereum.
I think they
just
are
slowly transitioning Wall. So we'll have ICOs back. We'll have all this crap back that was illegal and you were going to jail for and was a scam fest. And it'll be Wall Street with light regulation.
And it'll still blow up.
It'll still blow up.
Yeah. It'll just be sanctified. All right. Here we go, I guess. Binance taps a banking giant. Is this what banking will look like under a Bitcoin standard?
So this is this was interesting when I read into it. So Binance partnered with a big Spanish bank. I think it's BBBV. I think that's their acronym. Anyways, BBVA. There we go. So what ends up happening here is you can move your have your dollars custodied with the bank. They'll hold them as treasuries, and then you can get tokens on Binance Exchange.
Right.
So it's not like they're custodying your crypto.
Right. No, they're just facilitating the fiat flows into the crypto exchange. And this is what JP Morgan is doing with Coinbase.
Yes.
And even JP Morgan would tell you he doesn't want you to buy Bitcoin, but they will issue the dollar coin, the stable coin, and help you go and do whatever you want at Coinbase, but use their rails, use their dollar equivalent coins. And they get a fee on all the transactions.
And the banks get to buy more treasuries.
None of this has anything to do with Bitcoin other than Bitcoin acting as a heat sink for, I think, in a monetary inflation so they could issue treasuries.
Right. That's a good point.
Right.
Yeah, so they need Bitcoin. That's the most important thing. And whenever that's happening, that's going to be greenlit.
Yeah.
All right. Metaplanet issues preferred shares in Japan. The country's yield-starved investor base could price them far more than in the U.S. What is the ceiling to MTPLF's Metaplanet strategy?
Well, you know, we're lucky. We have Michael R. Sullivan with us tonight.
Awesome.
He's writing the great American Bitcoin novel, but we're going to talk about Japan and how yield-starved they are. Michael, can you walk us through a little bit of what's going on in Japan from your perspective?
Yeah. What's up, guys? Thank you so much for having me. So I love to write. Everybody that follows me knows that. So I was so curious about how this was going to pan out in Japan. I was decided to sit down and write a detailed thread about it for my own learning to understand these things and some of the dynamics. And I started that thing bullish. I was like, all right, they're kind of mimicking MicroStrategy, doing similar things. And I left it being like, this is a fundamentally massive shift in the way these strategies are going to function. So very complex topic, these preferred shares that are functioning very similar to like a perpetual bond. The big difference is Japan's yields are so incredibly low comparatively to the US that if they can implement a very similar strategy, even if it's not precisely the same as what Sailor is doing, these things stand to have insanely high Bitcoin torque is the phrase he used. But just in short, like they can pay a lot of dollars or a small amount of dollars now for a boatload of Bitcoin and then arbitrage that difference using the Japanese markets. And blew my mind a little bit going through and doing some of the math.
What is actually the yield in the Japanese capital markets?
So I think I posted a couple in that thread. They're all over the place, or just depending on the duration and stuff, but they're, I think I have it over here. So the US numbers, it's like 4 to 5, right? Depending on the duration, like that's sort of what we're sitting right now. Japan, it's like less than 1. There is rumors that they'll be raising soon, but even still, like it sounds like such a small difference because it's like, oh, it's 3% difference or whatever. But when you apply that logic to some of these bond pricing maths, it's the difference of like 4 times larger in the amount of Bitcoin that they could buy for the same dollar. So the most, again, very complex. The most simplistic example I could probably give is like Sailor basically can say he'll pay $10 in perpetuity to buy $100 of Bitcoin today with his new preferred share, STRF. That's not precise math, but it's just close for the purposes of this. If he were to launch that exact same product in Japan, since yields are so high, he'd be able to say, I'll give you $10 every year in perpetuity, but get $400 of Bitcoin today. So 4 times as much Bitcoin because of that difference in the jurisdiction there. Again, lots of other complexity on top of that, but just the really simple version, like the ADIQ pleb style math of this thing is Japan is crazy for this new strategy of these preferred shares. It's kind of crazy people aren't talking about it more, in my opinion.
It's interesting that, you know, Metaplanet recently has had a pretty significant pullback. MNAV has contracted. So do you think this is going to change things dramatically for the stock?
I'm extremely bullish over the long term, for sure. Hard for me to say like shorter term price movements and whatnot, but after going through some of this, I do think they are in literally the optimal jurisdiction in the entire world. Like if you look and see what yields are every other country in the entire planet, Japan is the perfect one for this right now. Again, it was like deep into this curious, like, am I crazy? Is this like, why is this not looked at more closely? There are all sorts of smaller countries. Like I think some of the other ones I post in that thread are like London and Germany have relatively lower yields than the US at least, but Japan is so much lower than the rest of them because of various financial situations there that like I don't really have the time or the knowledge, frankly, to go in depth about. But they are the perfect jurisdiction to do this preferred share strategy that Sailor is doing.
Do we know, are they going to launch something similar to Stretch, like a money market type fund initially, or are they going to do a series of preferreds across different different types of markets?
I think we're going to find out in about a month here. At least that's kind of theorized. There's two that I heard Dylan posted about recently. I don't know exactly which ones they correspond to. They were kind of short on details in that one. I'm hoping for a STRC, like just because already that's been so successful. And you can already see like just how much the people in Japan are starved for yield. So like stuff like that would just be perfect for their situation.
Cool. Exciting.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's going to be wild.
For this insight, we'll have you back when you got the novel out.
Thank you so much, gents. I appreciate the time.
You bet. Have a good night.
Be well.
That's going to be crazy, dude.
Yeah.
I think Metaplanet's going to do some wild stuff.
Well, if you're enjoying the show, please like and subscribe. Tune in Tuesdays at 8 p.m. to Bitcoin Center, brought to you by Byte Federal.
Go bank yourself.
Yeah. Let's head over to the lightning round.
Head over to the lightning round, Cedric.
Yeah. Lightning fast. All right. Harvard.
Yes.
Buys 116 million in the Bitcoin ETF. Is Ivy League money the ultimate legitimizer?
So I don't know if y'all remember, but Harvard, Yale, and others bought Bitcoin back in 2020 from Coinbase.
I remember, that's right.
They never disclosed the amounts. We don't know exactly, sure, you know, how big of a position it was. But so this is Bitcoin ETF news. It is a significant amount of money. It's maybe it's bigger than what they bought in real Bitcoin. But it's, legitimizer. I think they legitimized the whole space back in 2020. They were some of the first to go for it.
Yeah, this is a good point. I don't think it's a legitimization. I think it's an allocation. I mean, this makes them one of like the top 30, one of the top 30 institutional holders of the ETF. So there, it's a large allocation. Mm-hmm. I mean, MicroStrategy just bought, $18 million worth of Bitcoin for their weekly buy. I mean, this is a real purchase.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a real allocation. So yeah,
for sure,
good for Harvard.
China curbs stablecoin promotion. Capital flight fears?
Yeah, I think so. Big time. That's what I have to say about that. I think they're scared shitless of stable coins. I mean, that is monetary imperialism, and they would be colonized. That's a way for money to leave. It's really easy with the, you know, the digital rails.
I heard that they're trying to create their own yuan stable coin.
I think, well, that's not a U.S. dollar stable coin.
No, but
coin.
I mean,
that's
like they're abandoning their CBDC program. Okay. It hasn't really been working out.
Oh.
And so they might be shifting to a yuan stable coin, thinking that will help. But I don't know how it helps when you can download USDT.
Right.
So are they going to put the Iron Dome over USDT in China?
I think they're going to, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
they tried to block, Bitcoin mining. They tried to cancel Bitcoin trading. I mean, they've tried to stop Bitcoin so many times.
Yeah.
Now they're trying to stop the stablecoin program.
If you follow the argument,
it's not going to be successful.
That the last fiat standing is the dollar before, you know, to Bitcoin, then the yuan goes down sometime before that. You're doing everything you can to not fall before the dollar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, how many people are going to, you know, open up a USDT wallet in China? A lot. All right.
Ether edges into the Treasury Corporation play. is chasing staking yield just proof most treasurers still really don't get Bitcoin?
Yes, I think obviously. You know, I just think Wall Street's going through their shitcoin moment. They found Bitcoin, and now they're going to shitcoin. It's also a cheaper, it's a cheaper treasury that you can get yield on. What Wall Street has not figured out yet, though, is that Ethereum doesn't work.
Yeah, I think this is just lipstick on a pig.
Yes,
it's to just, sell Ethereum, yes, and these other things in this moment here.
Yeah. All the bag holders are promoting this. Wall Street will figure out eventually that the Ethereum tech doesn't function.
Right. I would like to talk to a real live Ethereum ETF holder or Ethereum Treasury corporate treasury holder.
You know what they're going to say. You know what they're going to say.
I don't know, man. I would want to see one in real life.
Okay. Lightning capacity falls, usage soars. More efficient network or liquidity warning?
So this is public channels. We don't have a lot of insight into private channels. And also, I think this doesn't take into account that the price of Bitcoin is up. So less Bitcoin are, you know, in these channels, but mm-hmm. it's more,
it's holding more dollar
value. More dollar value to the, you know, the stakers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this might indicate some efficiency gains. But to me, this raises questions about the long term viability of Lightning and whether it's catching on or, you know, going to be implemented in ways that we are hoping for.
Like, I think I hear so much FUD about Lightning, and I really don't. I have not used anything that is as good as Lightning.
That doesn't mean that. I mean, this is like VHS and beta. You know, the people would argue that beta was a much better technology than VHS, but VHS won.
Right.
And, you know, Lightning could be an amazing piece of technology. It doesn't mean it gets adopted. And it doesn't mean it gets adopted in certain ways.
This is the way I'm looking at it, right? USDT coming to Lightning will change everything.
That doesn't move sats. I don't know how
it
this
does
changed.
Move sats.
Because you don't have to lock up Bitcoin to do this, though.
Yeah, you
that's,
do.
But I don't know. That's what I was reading in the article.
No. You're going to mint USDT on top of a sat to move it across the Lightning Network. It's sats that run over the Lightning Network.
We'll have to dig into that another time.
That's what a taproot asset, that's the way it functions.
Yeah, I don't think it's moving. It's not moving full Bitcoin value. So I don't know how much it actually locks up. If it's one sat, it could represent trillions in stable coins. And
yeah, you could stick anything on a sat.
You know, yeah, exactly. So it's not really locking up Bitcoin. The sats are...
Why do we need to lock up Bitcoin in the Lightning?
I don't know. I don't know how it benefits Bitcoin.
Talking about is that how fast and efficient the Lightning Network is. I don't think there's anything.
I agree with that. All right, Trump's Truth Social Bitcoin ETF on hold. Is keeping the U.S. president out of the ETF market better?
I mean, I think it is. I mean, it's. I mean, he. You know, that. To me, there's so much. There's so many reasons why politicians shouldn't be involved in finance. Right.
This is his kids. I guess they would argue.
I get it. But you're buying Bitcoin. Your dad's making rules and regulations.
I mean, yeah,
this is... I don't know, man. I'm all for free markets, but there's definitely an incentive structure there that's not going to lead to bad outcomes. Right. Like we're going to grill Nancy Pelosi for trading stocks and insider information. We're not going to grill the Trump family for
buying $2 billion of Bitcoin
and launching an ETF.
It was really interesting that the way I think of it, though, is the Trump family is really moving from real estate to
I get it.
The greater Bitcoin economy and staking sort of their claim to that ground. And an ETF is a pretty highly regulated vehicle, I would think, and pretty straightforward and hard to...
So, but you know, once this is done... If this if this gets done and then they say, oh, yeah, now we're gonna buy a million Bitcoin for the strategic Bitcoin reserve, and they pump their bags, how would you feel about it then?
I get what you're saying. How long do they delay and when do they approve? We'll see.
I don't know. I don't know that any of those this discussion we're having is a part of that, even that consideration.
Right. Yeah.
All right. author Jason. Wait, am I reading the right one?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Author Jason Meyer, a progressive case for Bitcoin, sparks heated exchange after Bitcoin magazine op-ed. Is the tent shrinking? Are we letting political affiliation matter more than Bitcoin?
Yeah.
I don't know. What happened here?
So he wrote a piece, and I think it's a very interesting piece, complimenting, I guess, his book, The Progressive Case for Bitcoin, but arguing that Bitcoiners, let's say, talking about the Bitcoin community, not that one mm-hmm. thing exists, but like
yeah.
have cultivated and ingratiated themselves to the Republican Party, basically. And we had an opportunity to just have entertained both parties and stay sort of agnostic and have Bitcoin apply to both and just swing back and forth. But it seems like, and so I think the argument is, as he makes a parallel case to 1980, when Reagan courted the evangelical Christians on moral issues, mm-hmm. and that it didn't really work out in terms of Christian adoption or religious fervor in the United States, or how, what's the way to put it? Like, people are less religious now than they were then. Yeah. And the way it's talked about in computer science is greedy algorithms. So look, you know, short-term gains yeah. for long-term losses.
I think Jason's falling for the hype. Because if you, I don't, maybe you were there, Jason.
That Trump has done things like Free Ross and Operation Chokehold. No, but
what I'm going to get at, if you go to the Nashville conference 2024,
yeah,
RFK,
who's independent,
started as a Democrat.
Sure, yeah, that's right.
And was by far the most applauded speaker about Bitcoin, political speaker about Bitcoin. I mean, that room was lit up. Like, he knew Bitcoin far better than Trump.
Agreed. And there are other politicians that knew it better than Trump then.
Like, RFK is the guy. That was not a right-left thing. That was just, this guy knows Bitcoin.
Yeah,
and we fell in love with it.
Trump, or speechwriters know Bitcoin.
Right. Trump got up there, kind of, you know, didn't quite excite the crowd like RFK did, but RFK joined his campaign. Trump was going to get stuff done for the Bitcoin community. We voted for him. I think the Bitcoin community is far more open-minded than he's letting it out to be.
I don't think he's questioning open-mindedness. I think he's, again, just how we're going to play. How are you playing your pieces on the chessboard and for long-term survival? I'm going to have him on the Bitcoin Matrix again.
No, I think
more.
It's great.
It's let's move everybody. On to the next one. White House Crypto Council Director Bo Hines resigns.
Yeah,
it's like a poem. Does this mark a fracture in the administration?
I thought maybe it did. You know, my conspiratorial tinfoil hat person that I am. But after researching it, it looks like he's interested in getting back into
making money,
the private markets,
capitalizing
some money. Yeah.
But why join the administration for only 7 months? I'm not saying that there's any sort of conspiracy or any sort of, you know, terrible thing going on, but why leave so early? Nothing's been accomplished, in my opinion, other than rhetoric. So there's been no Bitcoin bought. Not that I want that to happen, but that was sort of a promise and sort of,
well, you know, it might have, he might have been a reluctant participant, meaning there's a lot of people
His dad just joined the board of a coin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
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 Lovely.
So, you know, I don't know, you know,
come on, Bo.
Yeah. Let's, I think we should skip ETNs. ETNs are electronic traded notes. That's what they do in the UK or something. It's
you guys
trading debt, or fractions or shares of debt. I don't know why that would be interesting.
You guys skip PayPal and Coin, though. Let's go back to topic 7.
Oh, sorry.
You skipped. PayPal pushes crypto to checkout. Mm-hmm. Can payments integration chip away at Bitcoin's never spend mindset?
Well,
do we need to spend more Bitcoin to ensure adaptation?
This is one of those stories where it's all about Bitcoin in the headlines, but this is a crypto POS system.
Everything is about,
like, this bullshit crypto. They have like over 100 coins that they will take in and convert to USD, and then convert to their stable coin, and then send their stable coin to the retailer. So they're mopping up shit coins, any coin that you want to spend. So in that regard, right, if I'm holding a bag of a bunch of different coins, what's the last coin you're going to sell? The one that's done the best, your Bitcoin. the other stuff. So this is just like a way to drain liquidity out of the shitcoins. Everybody who's holding a bag of shitcoins that they got burned on is going to be like, let's spend that. Let's get rid of it. Turn it into the PayPal stablecoin and I'll buy a coffee with it and I'll buy whatever with it.
Yeah.
So I think it's, I think actually it's kind of,
good. I think the best thing the U.S. government could do is treat Bitcoin just as nice as they treat the dollar and not tax transactions as capital gains.
I do find it interesting, like Square, PayPal, these other, like they're all getting into the POS game now.
Sure.
I have a feeling that they know that that's coming.
Great. I love spend and replace.
Yeah.
Let's do and, you know, why not? I think it's great. I think people shouldn't be afraid to spend and replace. I think people shouldn't be afraid to spend their Bitcoin on life experiences and what they need.
Do it. Do it. You got the last question, buddy.
All right. Trump advisor David Bailey just said his company will buy over $1 billion worth of Bitcoin today. Will this drive up the market, you know, as it should?
Apparently it did.
It never does when any of these large buys.
Oh, I mean, we went up.
You're giving an opportunity.
When he announced it, last 2 days we've been up. But I don't think it's going to drive to 150K. I mean, it's, you know, they use VWAPs and they use other ways to trade these and get these positions. So it's not going to be a smash buy.
Even if the price dumps a little bit, I mean, they get, say, cheaper Bitcoin. And what was interesting is the shares of Nakamoto went up 50% in trading yesterday. I mean, they even got frozen for a minute. Mm. So I don't know when their unlocks happen, but maybe you make that announcement to get a huge bump in your, you know, share price for unlocks. It has nothing to do with maybe your Bitcoin acquisition strategy. Or this is the messaging and the new style of Bitcoin treasury companies.
If you make the announcement, your shares go up, right? Now you can sell some shares and even pull in more liquidity and buy more Bitcoin.
Right. So create your own flywheel. It's
760 million in Bitcoin, not a billion.
Yeah,
that's still a shit ton of Bitcoin.
I'm kind of happy for David Bailey to kind of get that dream come true for
How can you complain about people buying Bitcoin?
Yeah, right.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
Right, but I think the traditional markets would see it as immature to kind of announce or pre-announce your intention.
They don't understand the MNAV game.
No, they don't. So we'll
they don't understand accretive dilution, as I learned on your podcast today from Jesse.
Yeah, well, that's still a paradox, my friend. We do have Punter Jeff. I was able to talk to Jeff Wallen earlier today. If you guys like what you're seeing, please like and subscribe here on YouTube, on X, _ Bitcoin Center on X, and on YouTube on Byte Federal's channel. But let's cut to my chat here with Jeff. Talk about Q2 earnings call with MSTR. Welcome to Inside Bitcoin on Bitcoin Center. Welcome back, Jeff Walton, a.k.a. Punter Jeff. It's great to have you. And congratulations on the new role, VP of Bitcoin Strategy at Strive. Thank you for joining us. What was your impression of the Q2 earnings call from Strategy and Michael Saylor?
Yeah, Q2 earnings call was incredible. It was a great presentation. Once again, they are leading a masterclass of how to interact with their investors and to provide information and reshape this world of finance surrounded around Bitcoin. So it was incredible to watch another just great presentation, really walking through all of the instruments. And it looks like they are listening to what the market is concerned about. And they are hitting on all of the things that they are seeing in the Twitter sphere and the concerns that people have, and they're putting it in a really good presentation to the market that's easily digestible, albeit it takes time. You've got to actually watch the entire thing, and people probably need to stop and, you know, listen to things and think about it for a little while. But another incredible presentation. It was also really cool to be a part of the panel at the end that got to ask a question. And prepping for that was interesting because I was trying to figure out what question do I ask? Like, how do I make a hard question that's like really powerful here? And how do I make sure that nobody else asks it? And it was a great time. It was great to have Bitcoiners, like actual Bitcoiners, on asking questions as opposed to these, you know, typical stock analysts that work at these investment banks that are trying to, you know, put out price targets on the stock. And now you are bringing in independent people that are focused on Bitcoin and talking about the equity in a, in a positive light, but also analyzing things very seriously. Like this is a very serious part of our life. So it was, it was a great experience. And the question I asked was, I got a really great response from Sailor. I was asking about, based on the changing characteristics of the different types of leverage that they're taking on, given that the preferred debt or the preferred equity has a different leverage characteristic, given that it's perpetual forever compared to the convertible debt, how does that change your view on leverage? Can you take on more leverage? And got a great response from Sailor that because there is no duration, they can potentially leverage the balance sheet a bit higher than they have in the past. And then walked into this concept of Stretch being their iPhone moment, providing a product that the market hasn't seen before, but everybody really needs.
Sure.
So, it was great.
I love how you kind of phrased it as the Amazon of digital assets. I thought that was really interesting. What about your takeaway on their ability to raise capital?
Yeah, so I think this is something that's missed by a lot of the market and the broader market, the broader Bitcoin market, the broader community, is the fact that they have ATM, shelf ATM registrations on each one of these preferred equity instruments. Now, this provides them the ability to raise debt-like capital at the push of a button and after a phone call. And it may not even need a phone call. It might just be push of a button based on some algorithms that they hand over to the bankers and the bankers control. And historically, if you wanted to go raise debt capital, you have to put together a pitch deck. You go out to the market and you say, hey, I'm looking to raise $100 million of debt capital. You go canvas the market. You go find best terms from anybody in the market. And you probably go syndicate a deal. Maybe you get $150 million from one company, $50 million from another company. And that's the entire process. And it takes a bunch of time. It takes a bunch of energy. It takes a bunch of people working on it, going in one direction. And now they've streamlined the entire process. So they've put together a pitch deck. They went out to the market. They raised capital via these IPOs. And then they put an ATM shelf registration on it. So now that they can press a button and raise that capital whenever they want. So they don't have to go through that entire process again of going back out to the market to go raise capital when they want to. They can do it at the push of a button and bring those dollars in the door when it makes sense, when they want to. And they can do that whenever. They can go issue these stocks whenever. It will impact the price of these instruments and how they trade. So they want to be careful about how they issue them, when they issue them, the liquidity of the instruments, making sure that they continue to be viable within the market, the economics make sense. And as these instruments get more popular within the market, as the industry begins to accept them, as debt holders begin to look at these instruments as crucial pieces of their portfolio, as fixed income managers look to add these instruments to manage their long-term liabilities, and as these instruments get rated, their ability to raise that debt capital is going to skyrocket. And they're going to be able to do it with the push of a button, as opposed to having to canvas the market and go raise this capital. So it's the opposite of the convertible bonds too, right? If you think about how the convertible bonds worked, every time they wanted to go issue a convertible bond, granted they did them very quickly, they would have to go out to the market and say, hey, I want to issue this convertible bond. Here's the terms. They had to go get agreement from the market to go issue these things. So back in November, when they issued the $3 billion at the top, they had to get something out to the market and say, hey, we want to issue this. It probably started 3 or 4 days beforehand, before they issued the convertible bonds. But it was energy and effort that they had to put in to get that capital in the door. And now they could just do it at a click of a button, and it's perpetual. There's no expiration. So this is a fundamental change in the capital structure and provides them just maximum flexibility and infinite capital raising potential. So I'm incredibly excited about it, and I looking to emulate it.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be interesting to follow you emulating it. What did you think of, or how do you see them positioning themselves for Q3 earnings with the FASB rule changes and maybe having some trail or tail here with earnings?
Yeah, so Q2, the earnings report was huge, right? They had this blowout earnings per share. They posted $32 earnings per share. Analyst estimates were -$0.06. And there was a lot of attention on it, rightfully so. A lot of people were speculating if the price of the stock would move in any certain direction as the world reprices, balance sheet unrealized gains in one certain direction. And a lot of the market sentiment was that this is a one-time gain. And even a lot of the news articles that came out is this is a one-time gain. And so far through 40 days of Q3, they're sitting on another $6 billion unrealized gain, potentially more, and $20 earnings per share through 40 days of Q3. And this is fundamentally, it's a new way of thinking about how to value companies as a balance sheet company and the assets that they hold on a balance sheet, as opposed to expectation of future cash flows, something that may happen on the horizon. Both of those measures, in my opinion, are measures of financial strength. An expectation of future cash flow, to me, that's a measure of financial strength. Another measure of financial strength is the actual assets that you hold on your balance sheet and how they're growing and your ability to continue to raise capital to, buy more assets. So there's two valuation systems that are clashing together in epic proportions, and there's a lot of disagreement on this and how you should value these companies. And a lot of people in the expectation of future cash flow side are saying, I don't want to pay a multiple for somebody's assets that they hold on their balance sheet. And it begs the question, why does anybody hold any equity to begin with? Like, why do you hold an equity? Like, do you hold an equity to store your value? Do you hold your equity to gain value? Do you hold an equity for dividends? What's the point of the dividend? Do you hold an equity for stock buybacks? What's the point of the stock buyback? What happens if there's disruption in the market? What happens if, the market change or shifts on you? What's the best position to be in for, long-term capital appreciation? And I view that a bit differently than other people. I'm not in the expectation of future cash flow side. I'm in the balance sheet strength side, because I think the viability of that balance sheet into the future is going to outpace 99.9% of companies probably on the planet.
Yeah, the biggest takeaway I had was the strength of their balance sheet now with Bitcoin. They put them in fifth in short-term investments on their balance sheet, right behind Google, Amazon, and Microsoft, which it looks like from Fang Li's estimation, they could pass within a year or two. And it just puts them behind Berkshire Hathaway with, $348 billion, which they're in arm's length reach if there's a strong bull market here. What was maybe your final for this conversation takeaway going forward as we wrap up?
Yeah, going forward, there's so much to be excited about here. That the capital markets are going to reevaluate things in the future, factoring in assets on balance sheet as we enter this period of AI disruption. The S&P 500, seven of the stocks in the S&P 500 outperformed the S&P 500. The other 493 lag. And those 493 companies are subject to massive AI disruption. And we're going to see a significant rollover and turnover in the companies in the S&P 500 over the next 10 years. And they're going to be replaced by AI companies and companies with strong balance sheets that can withstand AI disruption. And I'm positioning myself to be a part of, a part of that journey in the rollover of the S&P 500 and get into the Bitcoin 100.
Well, thank you for joining us on Inside Bitcoin, this edition of Bitcoin Center. Can't wait to watch you cook, Jeff. We'll have to have you back soon. Please like and subscribe. Thank you so much, Jeff. Talk to you later.
Take it easy.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
The last part when he described the AI disruption, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that just so like Saylor pointed this out so long ago that cash flow is a melting ice cube. Turn that cash flow into asset as quickly as possible. And now when you start to think about how like small garage teams are going to just start chewing away with AI, chewing away the income streams of Google and Apple. And, oh my God, Microsoft, they're all smoked.
Yeah.
They've totally disrupted themselves into oblivion over the long term. And if they don't convert that cash flow to Bitcoin, they're done. Leaving strategy at the top.
Yeah.
It seems inevitable to me. Well, why is that N, or why is the MNAV of SQNS 0.46?
Robert Schmidt's asking. Wow, that's a great question. That's Swan's entity over in, I think, France, or they bought a French company or Shell. That's a great question. And I think if I had to hypothesize, I think insiders dumped when they had the unlocks. That's my guess. I have no proof. Why do you think their MNAV is so low? And what is that indicative of? I think also Semler might be at one or lower than one. Yeah. Semler Scientific.
I think it's a matter of how fast you're stacking Bitcoin per share.
And how clear you are, maybe,
how
to
clear
the market.
You are about it, right? How, like, do you show a clear path to being able to add Bitcoin at a faster rate than other smaller other companies? The amount of Bitcoin on your balance sheet relative to the size of your company, all those factors come into play. So if they could illustrate a game plan that's going to show rapid appreciation of Bitcoin per share, then this could be a great buying opportunity.
Yeah, maybe it's a winner take most in all these markets, and maybe, mm-hmm. you know, the blockchain group, I think that's Adam Back's entity in Europe, or, you know, the Smarter Web company in the UK, maybe that's where the European money is going right now in terms of escaping, you know, the fiat matrix and trapped capital. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's one to keep an eye on. You know, I think right now the whole industry, or if you call it an industry, the Bitcoin treasury companies, is going through an MNAV compression. Obviously, we're seeing it, you know. And Jesse Myers noted in my conversation with him, you know, that probably on 3 month cycles here with these treasury companies.
I was actually thinking about that today. You know, there's probably a lot of people that think, oh, we're coming to the end of the 4 year cycle, and we're going to go into a bear market. So I've had great gains on these. I'm going to sell them and get out, and I'll buy back in on, you know, depressed MNAVs and the Bitcoin's in a bear market. But there's a case to be made that bear market is not coming because there's so many treasuries buying Bitcoin.
Yeah, or maybe we got 3 month cycles and it's smaller bear markets or drawdowns. Great question.
We're going to have to see. Robert. Yeah. Thanks, Robert.
That's all.
All right.
Okay. Well, that was a great show. I had a blast.
As good as always. Production quality was phenomenal.
It's a work in progress.
You know. Thanks for joining us, folks.
Yeah. Go bank yourself.
Find a bi-federal ATM near you.
This is Bitcoin Center, episode 15. I'm Cedric Youngelman.
I'm Paul Tarantino.
Go bank yourself, brought to you by Bitcoin Federal.